Dancers have a lot to balance. From their pirouettes to their jumps, a dancer's performance is a direct result of hard work and motivation. So where does food fit into this? There's a lot of myths and a ton of antiquated ideals about what a dancer's diet should look like. And I'm here to dispel those. I'm Rachel Fine, registered dietitian nutritionist and founder of To The Point Nutrition. I'm the dance nutritionist, and I'm here to tell you that to be a successful dancer, you don't have to diet. Instead, I'll teach you how to use food as your best tool to enhance your performance. A nourishing meal plan not only fuels your dancing, but also enhances your strength, improves your balance, supports your flexibility, and most importantly, reduces your risk to injury.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Leanne?
I'm good, thank you.
So, Leanne, I'd love for you to give us an introduction and also walk us through when you started dancing, your pre-professional days, and then really when it took off as a professional.
Okay, so I started dancing when I was about 5 years old. You know, like most little girls, they either go to kind of ballet or gymnastics or horse riding or something, and mine was ballet. And I loved it from the offset. I just loved moving. I did all sorts of dancing. I did jazz and tap as well. And then when I was 11, like 10, 11 years old, I auditioned for the Royal Ballet School, mm-hmm. and I got a place there. So I went away to boarding school when I was 11.
Wow.
Yeah, and studied for 5 years at the lower school and then went to the upper school. And then I got my job in the Royal Ballet Company when I was 18. And I danced with the Royal Ballet for 12 years. And then this amazing opportunity arose. Christopher Wheeldon was in London making Alice in Wonderland. And he actually approached me on social media and over Facebook and just said, oh, I heard you used to sing in the choir at school. Would you like to audition for me? And I didn't exactly know what I was auditioning for at the time, but it turned out to be a Broadway show. And yeah, so I took a year's sabbatical from the company because I always thought I would go back. But I had such a wonderful time being in an American in Paris and being in New York and on Broadway, and then knowing that the show was going to continue and come back to London and do the West End, I decided to kind of hang up my ballet shoes. Obviously I still wear my ballet shoes in the show, but I left the Royal Ballet and I'm now a freelance dancer and teacher. Actually, I'm actually on the teacher's training course with the Royal Ballet School at the moment, so yeah, wanting to try and pass on as much knowledge as I possibly can. I have a real passion for that kind of crossover between ballet and musical theatre. So to help as many people as I possibly can to do that crossover, because it is a really magical one to do.
And it's not one that we hear about often. It's the true ballet route into Broadway, I think we hear about less often than when a dancer is maybe either more into musical theater from the start or jazz, or maybe they're more like a commercial dancer. So it must have been a bit of a leap of faith, for lack of a better phrase, when you decided to go on that audition. Was that nerve-wracking?
Terrifying. Well, mainly terrifying because, obviously as a ballet dancer, you're silent on stage, and to suddenly have a voice, to speak, to sing, was really quite scary. Dancing is a vulnerability because you're kind of expressing yourself, but to express yourself with your voice feels a whole nother level of vulnerable to me. Probably not to... It'd feel quite the opposite to an actor. If they suddenly had to express themselves through their body, through dance, they'd feel very vulnerable. But for me to suddenly have my voice out there, I felt very vulnerable on stage. For a good year, I'd say. It took a long time to kind of build my confidence in that. And still now, even doing something like this sometimes is a bit scary, to actually put yourself out there and speak. is a little bit scary when your whole life you've been a silent performer.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. And that's what, in my opinion, one of the things that makes dance so unique is that our need to have to speak and express so much without speaking at all. And I love, mm-hmm. I love learning from you about how that was a major challenge to go from that world to then, you know, on the Broadway stage and using your voice and having to really muster up and, I guess, learn that confidence and still challenging yourself every day. I think a lot of dancers, younger dancers, need to hear that, even doing something like this. Even for me, I do these every week, and I'm not going to lie, like, it's at the, you know, at 12:59, I get a little bit nervous myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same for me now with teaching, you know, to stand up there in front of students and have the confidence that I do kind of know what I'm talking about, but to actually put it out there to them and for them to trust me, you know, trust me with their training. I find that quite nerve-wracking as well. But, you know, every time you do it, you get better and you learn more. Even you learn from your mistakes as well. So, yeah, so the whole thing is a huge learning curve, and it's an exciting one as well. I think that's, for me, one of the most exciting things in life in general is to never stop learning and to just be curious about everything, and just embrace anything that comes your way.
Yeah, I also feel that way, even just in the dietetics world, and always coming to terms with that. As much as I've been through with school and degrees or whatever, I still don't even know nearly half of what I want to know. Mm-hmm. And I probably the same for you as an artist. And I'm curious how it was it your first time in New York when you moved for An American in Paris?
I'd been on vacation before.
Yeah. Different.
My first ever trip to New York actually was when I was at school at the Royal Ballet School. We happened to do an exchange with ABT2.
Oh.
And so ABT2 came to London, we came to New York, and we did a couple of performances there. And then I've been on vacation. Actually, the first Broadway show I ever saw was West Side Story at the Palace Theatre, which happened to be the theatre that I then later got to make my Broadway debut in. It was, I mean, the thought of that, you know, I would never have thought that sat there. You know, I queued up for my tickets at TKTS to get, you know, the best tickets I possibly could that afternoon. And then to think, you know, years later down the line that I would actually be on that stage, it was just never even in my kind of thoughts that that would happen. So yeah, I love New York. I can't wait to come back and visit again when you let us Brits back in. We're not allowed in at the moment.
Was there ever a time that you decided to connect what you were eating was going to impact you? Like, when did nutrition ever come into play for you?
It came in actually massively in New York, because doing 8 shows a week is incredibly strenuous on the body. Of course, being in the Royal Ballet, you know, you is incredibly strenuous as well, but you're not generally, you don't perform 8 times a week. It's probably 5 max, because we would alternate with the opera. So to suddenly be doing 8 a week, it very much became, I had to plan, especially on double show days, very carefully. It wasn't even so much what I was eating, it was when I was eating. But to get the timings right, and hydration as well, especially in the summer months in New York, because it was so hot there. I wasn't used to that heat at all. So hydration was a massive thing for me. And getting my timings right on a double show day particularly. But I would always eat after a show. My biggest meal would always, well, I'd always have quite a large breakfast, and then a more of a kind of light snack kind of before the show, and then I'd eat after the show.
Yeah, it's so interesting. That's one thing that I work on with a lot of the dancers that work with me, is how dancers, just because the nature of the activity, can't be 100% intuitive with like how we're eating. We have to have like more of a proactive approach. And so often that involves the timing and understanding like how, what foods work for what dancer, like before class, you know, if you're changing your point shoes, how to have a snack, and then of course recovery. So I think it's so interesting, especially that it was kind of like thrown onto you when you came to New York, 8 shows a week, extremely strenuous on the body and probably also mentally, just to make sure you're, you know, not feeling burnt out and making sure you're fueling yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'd always make sure I had snacks in the dressing room. I never, during the show, I never get a chance to go back to the dressing room, but mm-hmm. during the interval or intermission, I'd always make sure I had something. So I knew I had enough left to get to that ballet right at the end, because the biggest dancing part is right at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So I always had to make sure that I had enough in me to get to that moment, especially on that double show day.
Sure. Oh gosh. Yeah. I can't even imagine how strenuous a double show day is.
Yeah, it was quite tough, actually. The hard thing was we do Friday double Saturday and a Sunday matinee. Having yeah. four in such a short space of time was pretty tough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And getting that recovery in, like that recovery meal, that recovery time. You have Mondays off, right?
Yeah, we did in on Broadway. It's every place I've done it, it's been a slightly different schedule.
Sure.
But having that, doing a Sunday matinee, having the whole of Monday, not being happy to be in until Tuesday evening, did give you a lot of time to kind of recover physically, you know, with sleep, with food, if you can try and grab a massage on the Monday, or yeah, just to have a day to just to completely chill was great.
Sure.
Yeah.
My next question really gets into a bit more of a sticky topic, but as you know, so many dancers struggle with very unrealistic ideals around body image. And this is a huge struggle. You as a teacher probably maybe eyewitnessed some of this. So I'm curious, mm-hmm. what advice does it ever come up in the dance class? How have you dealt with it over your, you know, years of teaching and of even being the student?
Yeah, I've had some moments in my time. I do think things are changing.
Yeah.
There's definitely been, well, this course that I'm on with the Royal Ballet School, I know they're addressing it hugely, and the nutritional advice for the students is fantastic.
Yeah.
And they really, not only nutritional advice, but the kind of the support.
Yeah.
The mental side of it as well, you know, making sure they're as stable as they possibly can be in their relationship with food, that emotional relationship that they may have as well. I know they are addressing that, and I know they're really trying to help all the students kind of put in good practice right from the beginning. But yeah, in my time, I've definitely come up with moments in my career when there's been moments that, you know, happen to be some of the saddest moments, you know, the harder moments to deal with. But it's a really sticky, difficult subject, like you said. I think it's about the support.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like, at the end of the day, what you're saying with what Royal Ballet is really integrating into their education, that's what it's all about. If a dancer has strong support and knows where to go when they're having thoughts, whether those thoughts are that they don't like their body or they're very, very comparative in the mirror, whatever it is, those thoughts are going to impact them. It's going to impact their ability to concentrate in class, to, you know, succeed long-term. If they're not fueling enough, they're going to be tired. So if the higher ups are there to help support and bring that education, I think that is such a huge, huge benefit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's all about the education and the support. Mm. And I wish, you know, in my time I'd had that, because, you know, there were moments when it's also the language used. Like, if there has to be something that needs to be addressed, whether sure. you're a professional dancer or a student, you know, it's gone one way or the other. It's how that language is said to you. How is it said? Because that will have a huge impact on how you as a dancer will address that situation. So the language and the support is a huge deal. And I also think, you know, I'm learning as a teacher to not use the mirror. We, as much as possible, we don't use the mirror. And I think that's great for dancers to, one, not compare themselves, two, not be only looking for their faults, because generally that's what we do with the mirror, isn't it? We don't look for what's good, we look for what's bad. We're taught to constantly be giving ourselves feedback. What can I make better? What can I do with this? What can I do with that? If the mirror's not there, it's about how you feel.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's what you're putting onto stage, is how you feel. You're going to not have a mirror to reflect back to you. The only thing that's going to reflect back to you is the audience's reaction. So it's about what it feels like. And do you feel good in your body? And I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah. And do you feel confident? You know, so true. We all know we're not going to have mirrors when we get to the stage. But I've never heard it from that perspective in regards to only dancers, unfortunately, only focusing on their faults and not what they're actually doing really well. And I think that, unfortunately, is like a way of the culture. So having, you know, teachers like you, and you starting to pave the way for actually bringing in that positive reinforcement, not negative reinforcement, is so helpful for a dancer's confidence, you know, to build that framework from a young age. My next question for you is, you know, dancers really tend to hyper-focus on their art. How did you, and how do you just keep balance? Well, obviously now you're a mom, so you've got a lot going on.
Yeah, there's quite a lot going on at the moment. Just keeping a balance just generally with life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt when I've come home, I leave dancer Leanne behind. Yeah. Like when I close that door. And it's the same because my husband's a dancer as well. And we've kind of always had that rule that when the door closes, we're Leanne and Paul. We're not so-and-so of the Royal Ballet or so-and-so from American in Paris. To just be, I love being a normal person. And I don't know what I even mean by that. Like, I love going to the supermarket. I love putting the washing out on the line. I really enjoy doing normal things. So it's, and just kind of being with family, being with my parents, being with my brother and his wife and his children and my husband's family. It's so important to just, you know, the ballet world is wonderful, but we hype it up to such a high level and we make it everything. It's absolutely everything. I have to go to bed early because I have a show tomorrow. I have to eat this because I've got a show tomorrow. I have to do this. It becomes very, very selfish. For me, it's quite important to leave that all behind and to just kind of be a totally normal person.
You know, this you're reminding me of just like a little personal story that I have real quick. I had just gotten pregnant with my son, and I remember being on the phone with my mom and like coming from ballet class. I was in the city walking from ballet, and I was saying like, oh, I'm going to figure out my schedule so that I can continue to dance when he's born or whatever. And she's like, you're going to see like everything's going to change when they come because you're not going to be so selfish. And that never fully hit me until I became a mom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I totally agree. Because it's a very self-absorbed, it's not self-absorbed, it's a vocation.
Yeah.
You know, it's a vocation, and if you aren't like that, if you aren't that dedicated to it, it's probably not going to happen. This career. So you have to have that side of your personality that you're willing to put that into it. But it's also great to take maybe one day a week or one evening a week to just leave dancer person behind and just be you. It's, you know, I love this world. I think it's absolutely wonderful and it's so special. And the thought of like my daughter, like maybe being able to watch the Nutcracker from the Wings one day is so, so special. But I also, it's perspective, isn't it? It's just having a little bit of perspective. And I think if anything, the last kind of 18 months has taught us is perspective.
100%. Yeah. And I'm a little curious, when you were on Broadway, because it is such a different, I don't know if it's really, it's definitely different from the dance world. You've probably were able to better connect maybe with your character because you had other experiences, because you maybe learned to have that perspective and like leave, you know, the ballerina at the door.
Well, it's strange because the character I played was a ballerina, so I could kind of bring all that angst with me. It kind of helped. True. But there were also, you know, there's moments that, as far as the show's concerned, you know, it's set just after the Second World War, like the liberation of Paris.
Yeah.
And trying to put yourself in their shoes, you know, in some ways, I mean, this sounds incredibly like dramatic, but you know, we've been having to isolate, haven't we? Yeah. And all having, we've almost had a curfew and had to be indoors and not allowed to see each other and to hide away. And in some ways that's given me as best a possible perspective of what it may have been like for those people that were living through the liberation in Paris. Like they weren't allowed to go out and buy all sorts of food. You know, it was limited. And I don't know what it was like in America, but like you could not buy pasta at one point in the UK because everyone was buying pasta. You couldn't buy flour because everyone was making banana bread. We had like rations.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes. But as far as like the ballet things goes, I guess because she was still a ballet dancer, I still had to bring that side of it with me. But,
yeah, very good point.
Yeah, but definitely finding, yeah, it's great, like you say, to just be someone else for 2.5 hours a day or 5 hours a day if you're doing a two show day, to kind of, yeah, immerse yourself into someone else's footsteps is kind of great, actually, especially if when you like her. If you didn't like the person you were playing, maybe not so nice to be them for that long. But I quite liked her, so it was a privilege to play her.
That's awesome. So talk to me a little bit about motherhood and COVID.
Yeah, so I found out I was pregnant almost this time last year, actually. And we just, we'd come out of one lockdown. We'd had a lovely, everything kind of went back to normal in the summer. And then it all went a bit wrong again here. Mm-hmm. It's all been a little bit crazy, but COVID was, so I closed American in Paris on the 1st of January 2020. And I remember literally on New Year's Eve standing on the balcony of the Châtelet Theatre watching the Eiffel Tower like glittering at midnight. And we were all toasting like, hey, it's the 1920s. It's going to be amazing. Not the 1920s, the 2020s. And, we were all wearing like 20s dress up. It was amazing. And thinking how wonderful it was to see in a new decade, and then little did we know, like a couple of weeks later, it would be the way it was. So I'd just finished that contract and didn't know what was going to be happening after that. The only thing I did know is that I wanted to do this teacher's course.
Sure.
And that was the only kind of definite that I had that I wanted to happen that year. It was kind of crazy, the lockdown. And then I found out I was expecting B, and she was born at the end of June. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of weird, you know, going to scans and things by myself.
I had the same. I had the same thing.
Yeah, husbands weren't allowed in. Luckily, by the time she was born, partners were allowed, because there was quite a few months here where no partners were allowed, and I had a C-section, planned as in 2 days before planned. and luckily he was allowed to be there, and it was amazing. It is the most amazing experience of my life, having her. I always knew I wanted to be a mum, known for years, and it's just, you know, it's happened a bit later, more later on in life than I originally thought it would, but you can't plan these things. But I'm absolutely loving it, and she's just, though I'm great. Well, I was reading, who was it, Megan Fairchild's reading about her. She's just finished her first season back, and she now has three little girls, isn't she? Mm-hmm. She just had twins, and she just said she's tired, but she's tired, it's an amazing kind of tired. Like, she, her life isn't full, it's fulfilled. It's, and I know exactly what she means. you know, you don't sometimes don't sleep at night, but who cares, because yeah. you're nursing this beautiful little baby. And I just don't know. I'm like, was I just really lazy and unproductive before I had a baby? Because now I'm like, I use every single minute. Like, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing. There's not a moment where I'm just sat like twiddling my thumbs. I'm like,
damn,
what did I do for all these years? I just twiddled my thumbs.
No, I totally agree. I think back to like what I did. I wasn't even as active like with my business before. I was working in a hospital, and your hours are very set when you're working in a hospital. And now I feel like every second of my day has to be like perfectly planned. And I'm like, what was I doing before this time? And you're right. The lack of sleep, you kind of just like do it. You just push through when you do it, and it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a complete joy. I may ask me in 6 months' time. I may not say the same thing.
So I was just going to say, my husband and I, we just went away for about 4 days without the kids. And it was like, I really did get a little burnt out. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, COVID has made everything much harder. But you're in a constant state of anxiety of hopefully, God forbid, anybody gets sick. And it's really a nerve-wracking time, I think, to have kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, whoever thought, like, you'd have a baby in a pandemic. It's just, you just don't even, like, none of us imagined this would happen.
Yeah.
But it seems like we're all coming through the other side of it now. Fingers crossed anyway. It is a slightly changed world, but maybe it's changed for the better. I mean, who knows? And hopefully, you know, all our freedoms will be back soon, and we can all travel where we want to travel and see everyone we want to see. Yes, I know. And also, I guess, in some ways, it was kind of wonderful timing-wise that my husband wasn't performing so much.
Sure.
So he could spend more time with us. He's back at work now. They have Romeo and Juliet tonight, and then the new Wayne McGregor tomorrow, mm-hmm. project. And yeah, so that he's crazy busy now. But at the beginning, it was wonderful to have that much time together.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of pros, a lot of cons. Leanne, my final question for you, which I ask everybody on this show, is how would you define what it means to be the healthy dancer?
Oh, goodness. Healthy, like, spans so many things, doesn't it? Like, it spans your mental health. For me, that's kind of number one. Because if your mental health is good, everything else hopefully will fall into place. So for me, confidence, feeling secure with yourself, knowing you've given everything you can possibly give, all these things, if your head is happy, I think everything else is happy. And you know, if your head is happy and you're healthy, you will eat the right things, you will make the right choices, you will look after yourself. Sometimes if we're not feeling that great up here, then we don't treat ourselves very well. Same if you're injured. If you don't feel great about yourself, sometimes you don't treat your body very well. You don't think you're worth it. So for me, a healthy health is all about here.
Yes, I could not agree more. You know, it definitely starts. We need to make sure we're taking care of our mental and emotional well-being. I think for dancers, it's so easy for us to just focus on the physical, to focus on the foods that we're eating, how it's going to help our strength and our endurance. And while all of that's important, it is even more important to make sure that we have, like, you know, how we said, support, and that we are learning actual helpful coping mechanisms for when we're feeling stressed and, you know, maybe emotionally burnt out, which are all very common for dancers. So I thank you so much for that advice. That was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. No, thank you for having me. Thank you for asking.